Here's the Aaronic blessing, or Aharonic blessing, as we are all familiar with. The Lord bless you and keep you. The Lord make his face shine upon you and be gracious to you. The Lord lift up his countenance upon you and give you peace. Now, the first thing I want you to recognize in here is the abstract words in here. We have bless, keep, gracious, countenance, and peace. All of these are Greek concepts. They're abstract words. Their meaning and their function is purely abstract. There is no foundation in the concrete. What do I mean by abstract and concrete? A concrete word is something that's related to the five senses. You can see it, smell it, hear, taste, or touch it. For example, wood is very concrete. That's something you can see, you can touch. A smell is very concrete. Tasting, foods, these are all concrete ideas. Hebrew, the biblical Hebrew language, is rooted in concepts that are concrete. Now, that doesn't mean that Hebrew is void of abstracts. However, their abstracts are related to something that is concrete. An abstract, then, would be something that cannot be seen, tasted, touched, smelled, etc. And we're going to take a look at some of those examples in the teaching here. We're going to take the Aaronic blessing, and we're going to break it down word for word, and we're going to look at it Hebraically. The first word in the Aharonic blessing is the Hebrew tetragram, the Yod-Heh-Vav-Heh, which most translations have the Lord. There is one, I think it's the ASV uses Jehovah. But the four-letter word is what we're going to take a look at first. It is what most people would call the name of God. What is a name? Well, from a Greek perspective, it's very abstract. In fact, if you take a look at people's names, people's real names, they are purely abstract. My name is Jeff, and all Jeff is a bunch of letters put together to make a sound. That's it. It has no meaning, it has no function, it has no concrete ideas behind it. Now, originally they did in ancient times, but in our modern day culture, we use names just simply as identifiers. And when we come across a name like this, okay, Yahweh, we're very comfortable with that because it's a name. It's just simply a bunch of letters put together to make a sound. That's all it is. But what we have to realize that in Hebrew thought, and in ancient times, all Hebrew names are words. They are words. A couple examples. Ishmael. Ishmael is Yishmael. And that's two Hebrew words put together. Yishma means he hears. And then El, he's the he. So Yishmael means El hears. Another one, Yaakov. Yaakov means he grabs the heel. Notice the yud in both of those. Yishmael and Yaakov. That's a prefix meaning he. Adam, another good example. It means human. Comes from the root Adama. And then Chawa, which means living. Now, most of you are probably familiar with her name that we were all taught, and that's Eve. Exodus 20, verse 7. You shall not take the name of the Lord your God in vain. Here we have the word name in there. What is a name in from Hebraic perspective? The Hebrew word for name is Shem. Shem. And if you notice that word is inside the word Neshema. These two words are related. What does Neshema mean? I'll give you a hint. It's found in Genesis 2, verse 7. And he breathed into his nostrils breath. That's it. It's the breath. You see, your Shem is your breath. Well, that don't make no sense to us whatsoever because that doesn't mean anything to us. However, in Hebraic thought, your breath is your character. It's what makes you you. It's your personality. It's your what makes you different from everybody else. That's your breath. So your breath is your character. Now, every time you see the word name in the Bible, replace it with the word character, and you'll have a better understanding of what that verse is trying to say. For example, you should not take the character of the Lord your God in vain. Now, you see, a lot of times what we think of, you should not take the name of the Lord in vain, that to us means not to swear. You're not supposed to use his name in a swear as a swear word. And that's not what this is about, not in any way, shape, or form. Now, literally, what the way this verse should be translated is, you shall not falsely represent the character of Yahweh. In other words, when we say we're followers of Yahweh, we're supposed to take on his character. We're supposed to act like he does. But if we go out to other people and we start stealing and cheating and lying, what are we doing? We're misrepresenting his character. Okay, in John 14:13, we have, whatever you ask in my name, this is Yeshua speaking, whatever you ask in my name, I will do it. Now here we have the word name again. What is he saying here? Now, the way we've interpreted this over the past 2,000 years is that, okay, if we want to ask Yeshua something, then we have to have this formula and put it on the end of each prayer in Jesus' name or in Yeshua's name. And that's what we all do. I do it myself. But why do we do it? Because of this, quote, formula. In other words, if you ask something, you get, in order for that to happen, you got to tag this on at the end of the prayer. That's kind of what we've been taught since childhood. But is that what he was saying? Absolutely not. In fact, just stick the word character in there, and it just completely opens up to a completely different meaning. Whatever you ask in my character, I will do it. What is he saying? He's saying that if you ask what I would ask, then I'll give it to you. Pretty simple. When we start talking about the name of Yahweh, there's several different camps on this. There's all the way to one extreme that says, the Lord is fine, that's all I need to use, all the way to the other extreme, whereas if you're not using this specific pronunciation, God won't hear you. Those are the two extremes when it comes to the name. And since the name does appear in the Aaronic Blessing three times, I think it's important. In fact, in Hebraic thought or Jewish thought from ancient times, that anything that's mentioned three times is significant. It's something of importance. So here in the Aaronic Blessing, we have it mentioned three times. What should the emphasis be on the name as in regards to how you pronounce it? Well, personally, I don't put that much emphasis on it. For two reasons. One is, we'll never know with 100% certainty how the name was pronounced. That is until a tape recorder is found from that time. Okay, I don't see that happening. So we're just really not going to know. The other thing is that there's something more important than how you pronounce it, and that is how you represent the character. Do you know the character? Do you understand the character of Yahweh? And that, when the Bible says to take his name to the people, it's not saying teach them how to pronounce it. It's saying take his character, who he is, what he is, and take it to the people and teach that to them. Exactly, Habibi, it's the Torah. Okay, that is what we're supposed to be taking, because the Torah is his character. As far as the name itself, remember what I said at the beginning here is that Hebrew names are all Hebrew words. And that goes for the Yod-Heh-Vav-Heh as well. It is a Hebrew word. The Yah, like I mentioned, Yishmael and Yaakov, is a prefix meaning he, and then it's the verb Hawa. And Hawa is equivalent to, for anybody that know a little bit of Hebrew, you should recognize the root Haya. Haya means to exist, to be, to exist, to have existence. And Hawa means the same thing. So Yod-Heh-Vav-Heh, the literal meaning of that word is he exists. Now there's also a possibility that it's what's called a causative verb. A causative verb, and we're going to talk a little bit more about causative verbs here in a bit, but a causative verb means that it's one who causes something, that the action of that verb to happen. So if it is a causative verb, then it would be he causes to exist, which fits beautifully with Genesis 1 and 2. In our Aaronic blessing, the first word in there is Yahweh. And by the way, I've used Yahweh mainly because that's the way I learned it, and also that's what most people are familiar with. I do not believe that that was its original pronunciation, but that's just what I use because most people are familiar with that. The next word is bless, and that's barach in Hebrew, the bet, resh, kaf. Now, this is a purely abstract word, bless. You can't see, taste, touch, smell, or hear, bless. And whenever you're reading in the, if you're doing a biblical study, you got your book out, you're studying, you got your notepad, you got your books cracked, okay, and you're going to do a study. This is one of the things that you really need to pay attention to. If in your reading in a passage, and believe me, there's a lot of them, in fact, probably 80, 50%, they're going to be an abstract word. Now, because abstract thought is not Hebraic, you're going to have to crack those books and try and find that original concrete meaning of that word behind the English. Because once you do, like we're going to use, as we're using the example of the Aaronic blessing here, you're going to find that if you start finding these concrete meanings of these words behind the English, the text is going to open up to you in a way you never thought possible. Because it's, the Hebrew language is so rich in meaning that just not one, two, or even three English words can really convey the meaning of each Hebrew word. Okay, so the word bless, this is an abstract. There's some other common abstract words. Glory is another abstract. Okay, what does it mean from Hebraic thought? It's the armament, or the armor, the weapons of God. To believe, in Hebraic thought, that means to support, to give support to something. Good. Good is abstract. The concrete is to function properly. Holy. What does holy mean? Now, usually we think of holy as someone who's pious or someone that's very good at his religious efforts. That's kind of what we think of as a holy. But in Hebraic thought, it just simply means exactly to set apart. But to set something apart for a special purpose. You see, now the full Hebraic meaning can't be explained. There is no English word that has that meaning. The closest would be special. I have two pairs of boots. I got my work boots, and I got my dress boots. My dress boots are strictly for going, you know, places where I want to look sharp at. Okay. So those are special boots. They're set aside for something special. Whereas my other boots, I'll wear them in a town. I'll wear them out here on the property when I'm working, whatever. Okay, so my special boots are set apart for a special function. Spirit. I mean, you can't get more abstract than spirit, which in Hebraic thought is the wind. Anger, that's another abstract. Anybody know what the Hebrew word is for anger? The Hebrew word is off, which means anger. It's the exact same Hebrew word for nose. Look it up in your Strong's Concordance sometimes. Look up the word off. It's Aleph Peh. And it's translated as anger in his nose. Why? Because what happens when you get angry? Your nose starts flaring. So that's why there's a connection. You see, the abstract and the concrete are put together in one Hebrew word. Now let's get to the word bless, and we'll uncover its original concrete meaning. Okay, here we are in Genesis 24, verse 11. And he made the camels kneel down outside the city. You see that word kneel down there? That's our Hebrew word barak, to kneel down. That is the concrete meaning of barak. But just a little short bit about Hebrew verbs, because it's kind of important to how this word is used. Each Hebrew verb has a voice and a mood. The four different voices are active, passive, and reflexive. Pretty simple, actually. Active means to kneel down. Passive means to be knelt down. And reflexive is to kneel yourself down. It means the action is imparted on yourself. So we have active, to kneel down, passive, to be knelt down, and then reflexive, to kneel yourself down. Those are the voices of Hebrew verbs. Each verb also has a mood, and there are three moods. Simple, causative, which I already mentioned, and intensive. The simple just means knelt down. It's a very simple action. The causative means it's to cause the action to occur, like I mentioned with the name Yahweh. And then the intensive, this would be to be like to drop to the knee. In other words, it intensifies it. And this intensive is also used to give a slight variation of the meaning of a verb. Now, whenever you see the word bless in your Bible, in the English Bible, that is the intensive form of the verb barak. The simple form we just read, Genesis 24, verse 11, and he made the camels kneel down outside the city. That's the simple mood of the verb. But in the Aaronic blessing, it's the intensive form of the verb, which means to drop to the knee. Now, from a Hebraic perspective, what this literally means is to drop down to your knees in respect to another person, as if to present them a gift. That's what the word barach means when used in the intensive form. Now, that can be taken as literal or figurative. Literally, when a man is going to propose to a woman, he gets down on his knee, he drops to his knee and presents her a ring. That's literally a barach. But it can also be figurative. If you're walking down the street and you see an old lady trying to pick up something she dropped, okay, she dropped something, you run over there and you pick it up for her and give it to her. Now, this is not really getting down on your knee and presenting something, but you've helped someone. That is also a barach. A couple of words that come from this verb barach, and that is barach, which is the knee. The Hebrew word for the knee is barach. That's the noun form. And you might be familiar with the phrase baracha, or the word baracha. That's usually translated as blessing. Literally, it's a gift. When we give our blessings to Yahweh, we give our baracha, we give Him our gifts. And remember, in Greek thinking, your blessings are just words. In Hebrew thinking, your gifts are your actions. Okay, there's a big difference between how we think in Greek versus how we think in Hebrew. What we do is much more important than what we think from a Hebraic perspective. The verse that comes right after the Aaronic blessing is this. They, the Hakohen, the priests, will place my name, my Shem, upon the people, and I will bless them. When we read a verse like this in the Bible, I'll be honest, because I did it myself so many times, you just read it and you move on. But we don't stop to ask ourselves some certain specific questions. For example, how do you take a name and put it on someone? How do you do that? That's a pretty good question, because that's what the text says. He will place his name on the people. So we need to back up and go, what does this mean? Exactly, you walk the character. He's going to take his character, because the Aaronic blessing spells out the entire character of Yahweh. It takes all of his character and boils it down into these three ideas. And they're going to, so the Kohen, they're the teachers of Israel, they're the ones who are supposed to teach the Torah, they're going to take that character and give it to the people and set it upon them, so that that character is now on them, and they will now follow through with this character. You see, the Aaronic blessing was not meant to be something that's just said at the end of a service, oh, that's nice. You see, it was supposed to teach the people how to act, because the Aaronic blessing describes how God works and acts, and we who have His name are supposed to emulate that and follow along in that character as well. And I, that's Yahweh, will kneel down and present a gift to them. Well, what's the gift He's going to give them? His character, His Torah, His teachings. Now, a lot of people have a problem with this idea of Yahweh kneeling down before us. And they say, where in the Bible does it say God will kneel down? Well, it says it right here. Okay? Every time you see the word bless, Yahweh blesses so-and-so, it says it right there that Yahweh kneels down and presents a gift. Now remember, that can be literal or figurative. Yahweh gives His teaching to His people. He's doing a baracha. He's kneeling down and presenting them a gift. By the way, what did Yeshua do? He's the one who represented the character of Yahweh most perfectly. What did He do? He knelt down and presented a gift to His Talmudim by washing their feet. Okay, the next word we're going to look at is the word keep. Here's a verse that uses that word. Deuteronomy 4, verse 40. Therefore you shall keep his statutes and his commandments, which I command you this day, that it may go well with you and with your children after you, that you may prolong your days in the land which the Lord your God gives you forever. Now, we usually equate the word keep with obedience. In other words, we could stick that word in here, therefore you shall obey his statutes and his commandments. And that's the way we usually look at that. However, if you look at it in the Aaronic blessing from that concept, or from that perspective, you've got a problem, because Yahweh will bless you and obey you. That doesn't work. So we know that keep must mean something else, its original meaning, which is to guard. But there's much more to it than just that. Therefore you shall keep his statutes. The statutes, the Hebrew word there is chok, and it means customs. And it's usually used in the context of the feasts. The feasts are the customs of Israel. And his commandments. A commandment or command, that's the Hebrew word mitzvot, but I don't like command because that's like an order. It's a general giving his commands to his troops. Okay? That's not the meaning of mitzvot. Mitzvot is directions to point out the way that someone is supposed to walk so they don't get lost. They're his directions. And what it's saying is to point out the direction you're supposed to go. That's what the commandments of Yahweh are. They're directions to show us how to walk in the way, the direction that we are supposed to go. That it may go well with you and with your children after you, that you may prolong your days in the land. Prolong your days, that's aroch, yamim. That's long days, a lot of days in the land that Yahweh has given to you. This is salvation from a Hebraic perspective. Yasha is the verb. It means to literally deliver you from trouble or an enemy, from disease. This is salvation from a Hebraic perspective. Imagine yourself as a shepherd. Remember, the ancient Hebrews were a nomadic agricultural culture. In fact, their language, most of the words in the Hebrew language, are rooted in this nomadic agricultural culture. These ideas, we need to understand them. If we want to read the Bible and understand it from the author's perspective rather than from our own, we've got to learn their culture and their way of thinking. The shepherd is out with the flock, and he's going to be spending the night, because they did. They weren't in camp much. They took the flocks out in the wilderness, and they spent the night out in the wilderness with the flocks. Now, they're out there, and they're going to be spending the night. What do you got out there? You got wolves, you got lions, you got bears. You've got a lot of problems out there, so you've got to protect your flock. So what do? You build a corral each night for your flock so that you can protect them. Well, how do you build a corral? You can't get out 2x4s and rails and all that kind of stuff. So where are you going to get the materials to build this fence out in the wilderness? The thorn bushes. They would gather up all the thorn bushes, and usually they kind of construct a wall of rock, and then on top of the rock, they would put all these thorn bushes to keep the predators out. This is a shamar. This is the Hebrew word and concept behind the word keep, the shamar. In fact, the word shamir, a noun from that, means thorns. Shamar is this concept of guarding with thorns. Literally, shamar means to hedge about with thorns. To hedge about with thorns in order to protect, to guard. In the ancient Near East, they would take beehives and place them in acacia trees. Acacia trees had huge, huge 2-3 inch thorns on them. Why did they put the hives in these acacia trees? Because it would protect them from the predators. Very, very interesting thing about honey that comes from the beehives. Honey is a very interesting word in the Hebrew Bible. There's a couple of verses. Here's one of them. And I remember when I've read this verse before, and we've all read this verse, but I don't think any of us actually caught this. Isaiah 7:15. Curds and honey he will eat to know to refuse the bad and the good. Did you catch that? By eating curds and honey, you will know how to choose from the bad and the good. What's really interesting here is that the honey in the Bible is equated with the Torah. The Torah is like the honey. You take the Torah and you put it in the acacia tree to protect it from the predators. What does it say we're supposed to do? We're supposed to keep the Torah? No, we're supposed to guard and protect the Torah. In the same way that the ancients took the honey, which is the Torah, and put it in the acacia tree to protect it. Our function is to shamar the Torah. We're to guard it, to preserve it, to protect it. When it says that Yahweh is going to guard you or to keep you, literally what he's saying, he's going to put a hedge of protection around you, just like the shepherd would do with the wall of thorns around it. The next word that we're going to look at here is panim, and it's pronounced pane in the text. It's actually the construct form, which means face of. Panim is, it comes from the root pana, which means to turn. What does our face do? It turns. It turns every which way. However, whenever the word panim or face is used, it's always in the plural. Why? Because in Hebraic thought, you have more than one face. You've got an angry face, happy face, sad face. You have many different faces. By the way, a panim in Hebrew can be a face of anything, like a surface of anything. In Genesis 1:2, the Ruach Elohim, the wind of Elohim, hovered over the panim of the waters, the face or the surface of the waters. Here's an interesting verse that uses this word, panim. Exodus 33:14. And he said, my presence will go with you, and I will give you rest. They say the translators use the word presence there from panim. Why didn't they just put face there like it says? And he said, my face will go with you. Well, they don't do that because that wouldn't make any sense to us. You see, English translations are written so that it makes perfect sense to a Greek thinker. So they remove all the Hebraisms, all the Hebrew concepts, they remove them, and they plug in Greek concepts so that Greek thinkers can understand the Bible. The problem is they're understanding it from a Greek perspective and then not from the Hebraic perspective. But literally it says, my face will go with you. Interestingly, prior to this, Yahweh says to Moshe, I'm fed up with you guys. I'm completely fed up. I'm not going to go with you into the land. You guys have to go on your own. If I go with you, I'm going to kill you. So Yahweh emphatically states he's not. But then he says here in verse 14, he says, but I will send my face with you. Well, that's very interesting. What does that mean? See, in Hebraic thought, if a person represents another person, they represent his presence, his face. So, somebody else is going to lead the people, and this person is the face of Yahweh. What does it say in Exodus 33, also in this very same chapter? It says that Moshe spoke with Yahweh face to face as though a man speaking with his friend. And then 10 verses later, Yahweh says, nobody can see my face or they die. What's going on here? No one can see God's face. Moshe can't see God's face, but then he sees God's face. There's somebody else involved here. Unfortunately, nowhere in the Bible does it actually come out and define these things. The way I like to understand it is the wholeness of being, the wholeness of that person is their face. When you're having a conversation with somebody, you're looking at their face. You don't look at their toes, you don't look at their feet, you look at their face, because that's their essence, that's who they are, and so that's the wholeness of their being. You can really read an entire person through their face, through their eyes, their mouth, their facial expressions, etc. The next word we're going to take a look at is, it says in the Aaronic blessing, to make shine. If you put a yod in front of a verb, what does it mean? That's right, he, exactly. He makes shine, Yair. And it's written in the causative form. We mentioned the causative form. It means not just he shines, but he causes to shine, or he makes shine. That's the Hebrew word or, the verb. Light and darkness are oftentimes equated together, or not equated, but antonyms. They're the opposites. In Hebraic thought, light is order, and darkness is chaos. In the beginning, God made the light, or he brought about the light. Why? If you walk into a darkened room and you're going to go to work, what do you got to do? You got to turn the lights on. You can't see without it. So, the lights bring about order. Darkness brings about chaos. Okay, here's the verse I was mentioning a minute ago. It has this word, to give light. This is in 1 Samuel 14, verse 29. Then said Jonathan, "My father hath troubled the land. See, I pray you, how mine eyes have been enlightened." That's the same verb here, or, to give, to shine. Here it's understood as to enlighten, to give light, to bring about order. Because I tasted a little of this honey. In other words, he ate this honey. Here's another verse that shows that there's something about honey. I ate a little of this honey, and now my eyes are opened. I understand now. I have enlightenment. Okay, the word or, interestingly, has this meaning of order, and is in our word order. Notice the word or in the word order. It's also, the word order has the word, or the root dor, dur, or dar, in it, dalet resh. Dalet resh in Hebrew is the door is the generations. In Hebraic thought, a generation is a circle, and it's also an idea of order. Some other words that mean order is seder. Notice the door in there as well, seder. That means an arrangement, like the sidur. The Siddur is the prayer book. It's an arrangement of prayers. The Passover Seder, same word, slightly different vowel pointings. That's an arrangement for the service of the Passover. Another one is Davar or Daber. There's the door again, but with a bet in the middle of it. What is Davar? What is Devarah? Davar is word. What's Devarah? Devarah is simply the feminine form of Davar. Deborah is the name. Remember, every name is a Hebrew word. Exactly, it's a bee or bees. Devarah is bees. What about this one? Midvar. It's got the word devar with a m in front of it. What is midvar? The wilderness. All right, what do all these have in common? They're all order. Words are an arrangement of words that are ordered in a way to make a sentence. Bees, their colony is so perfectly ordered, so that's why the word devarah comes from the root devar, or the idea of bees comes from devarah. And then wilderness is a place of order. It's in perfect harmony with each other. It's only when man intervenes his will in nature that things get messed up. Nature by itself always maintains an equilibrium and is in perfect harmony, perfect order. God took them out of the cities and took them where? To the wilderness. When he brought Israel out of Egypt, where did he take them? To the wilderness. When Yeshua wanted to pray, where did he go? The wilderness, to the mountains. The wilderness is a perfect place, and I've heard it before. This is my church. People talking about the forest, they say this. Well, there's a lot of truth to that, because God teaches us through the wilderness. It's where he is best understood, because Yahweh is in perfect order, the wilderness is in perfect order, and the wilderness is created by Yahweh. It makes perfect sense. Literally means to illuminate, to bring about order. That's the meaning of this word. Hanan is the Hebrew for the word gracious. Behind the word gracious, gracious is another one of these abstract words. Don't like the abstract words, because we can't get the meaning behind the Hebrew there. Okay, what is Hanan? Proverbs 5:19 says, "A lovely doe, a graceful goat." That word graceful is the word chen, which is the root of Hanan. Chen is the root to Hanan. They're almost identical in meaning. Again, grace and favor, these are abstracts. Even graceful is a little bit better as far as a concrete, because a graceful goat, a lovely doe and a graceful goat. If you've ever watched goats or deer as they jump, they're very graceful as they race through the forest. This is a little bit more of the concrete. It's a beautiful thing to see. So the idea behind this is a sight to behold would be a really good way to explain that. A sight to behold. Something that's beautiful. A word that also comes from this word chen or chanan is the word mechana. Anybody know what mechana means? It's a place of gracefulness. Mechana is the camp. Remember when Jacob set up camp on the other side of the river before he went to go Esau, and he called the place Mechana? It's the camp. So the camp is related to this idea of gracefulness. You're a shepherd, you've been out, you know, for days at a time, weeks at a time, tired, you're cold, you're hungry, you're starving, you're lonely. You come over the rise and you see the fires of the camp. That feeling that you get, that's chen. You see, the ancient Hebrews were very emotional people. Their emotions were very important to them. So a lot of Hebrew words are actually related to emotion. That's a concrete concept, the way you feel about something. So this idea of coming over the rise and seeing the camp, and what floods over you? Relief. There I have love, friendship, companionship, food, sustenance, all of this idea. This is the idea of Hanan. To translate this word as gracious with a very Greek abstract way just really falls short of it, whereas I prefer to understand it as this idea of love, sustenance, and friendship. Now, the word chen is probably the root to our word home. I mean, it kind of makes sense, doesn't it? Even mechana, which means camp, comes from chen, and chen is probably the origin of our word home. It says in the English translations, if I have found favor in your eyes, O Lord, when like Noah or Moshe is speaking to Yahweh. In other words, if you can look at me and you can see a friend, somebody that you can have fellowship with, that's what this word means. The next word is to lift up. That's Nasa, Nun, Samach, Aleph. This is also sometimes written with the letter Sin. It's written both ways in the Hebrew Bible. That's the Shin, but with the dot over on the left-hand side. Anyway, it's pronounced Nasa, and it means to lift up. Really not too much I can say about this word other than I think it's very interesting. And by the way, don't anybody say that I'm teaching this, because I think it's just a coincidence that the Hebrew word Nasa means to lift up. It is really kind of similar to NASA, which is to lift up rockets. I just find it very ironic. I thought it was kind of cool. Let's move on to the next word, which is the word seem. The word seem is translated as to give here in the Aaronic blessing. But literally what this word means is to set something in place. In other words, to cause it to be established and firm, to firmly set something in place. The next word that we're going to get into is the word peace. Now, the peace is another abstract word that usually means to us, most of us are pretty familiar with this word, shalom, but do we really understand what it means? Usually we understand peace or shalom as absence of strife or war. But that's not really the meaning of this. Let's go back to the root, the verbal root of this word. Exodus 21:34. The owner of the pit shall make restitution, giving money to its owner, but keeping the dead animal. Here we have the root word to shalom, which is shalom. Shalom. And that's translated here as to make restitution. What does restitution have to do with peace? We have to understand that shalom literally means to restore something back to its original state. In other words, if I'm missing something, I'm not shalom. In order to become to have shalom, I have to restore whatever it is that I'm missing. The verb shalom means to restore. The noun shalom means to have restoration, to have everything brought back to completeness, to wholeness. Yes, exactly, to be whole, to be complete. Now, we use the phrase Shabbat Shalom all the time, but do we really understand what we're saying Hebraically? Now, but from a Hebraic perspective, what you're really saying is that you're tired because you've been working all week, you're drained, and today is the Shabbat, and you need to be restored. So may your Shabbat restore you, is literally what this is saying. May the Shabbat bring about wholeness and completeness for you. That's what Shabbat Shalom literally means from a Hebraic perspective. In Psalms 122, verse 6, it says, pray for the peace of Jerusalem. When we hear that, we usually think of peace in the context of absence of strife and war, which, yeah, that's a good thing, and that is part of shalom, but it's not all of it. They need to be restored. Is Jerusalem restored? No. What's Jerusalem missing? A king. That's one. There's more. Moshiach. There's two. Order. Exiles regathered. That's good. There's one more that I'm thinking of here. The Torah. That's a good one. Missing the Torah. It's a very secular nation right now. There's one more thing that's missing. One key component of Jerusalem. There it is, the temple. That's it, that's right, the temple. When we say pray for the peace of Jerusalem, what we're really saying is pray that Jerusalem is restored to its original position, to where it's now whole, where it will be whole and complete, including the king, the Mashiach, the temple, order, the Torah, all of these things. Interestingly, in Hebrew, the way this is pronounced, pray for the peace of Jerusalem, is Sha'alu Shalom Yerushalayim. This is beautiful Hebrew poetry. Notice the shal and the shil in, you know, throughout this phrase. Hebrew loves to put words together that sound alike, which is why it's written this way. Sha'alu Shalom Yerushalayim. A lot of people ask, what does Jerusalem mean? Well, Yeru, it's two words. Yeru means to point out the way, literally to teach. And then Shalom means completeness. So what does Yerushalayim mean? Teach completeness, or point out the way to restoration. Yahweh, He who exists, will kneel before you presenting gifts and will guard you with a hedge of protection. Yahweh will illuminate the wholeness of His being toward you, bringing order, and He will provide you with love, sustenance, and friendship. Yahweh will lift up and carry His wholeness of being toward you, and He will set in place all you need to be whole and complete. To me, when you understand these words from Hebraic perspective, the words just come to life, and completely new revelations come up there. If you can do this with any study, with any sentence, any verse in the Bible, and you're going to find nuggets like this. It's just totally amazing.